Welcome to Christ the Center, your weekly conversation of Reformed theology. We're on episode 517. No, man, 717. What am I talking about? I'm getting my numbers all messed up. I'm living 4 years in the past. But my name is still Camden Busey. I remember that. And I am in Grays Lake, Illinois, at our Reformed Forum studio. Delighted to be back today. Got a wonderful and fun conversation lined up. We have with us in the studio today, Adam York, who's pastor of Hope Orthodox Presbyterian Church in Grays Lake, Illinois. Hey, Adam, how's it going?
Long time no see, brother. Yeah,
since Sunday.
Exactly.
Yes, we got a presbytery meeting lined up. We got a little event tonight, and then going to go to the presbytery meeting tomorrow morning down in Orland Park. But big news for the Presbytery of the Midwest in the Orthodox Presbyterian Church. We're dividing, but no acrimony. It's just got too large and unwieldy. And this has happened before, where we also used to include Michigan and Ontario, and we're splitting off. So Minnesota and Wisconsin are going to go on their own, and the rest of the Louisiana Purchase will still be Presbytery of the Midwest. Oddly enough, the way this is working, the Presbytery of the Midwest will be the name of the daughter presbytery. It's just how it is.
So confusing.
It's so confusing. Well, it could be even more confusing because the North, I think, is going to be called the Presbytery of Wisconsin and Minnesota. Thankfully, at least they didn't go with Minnesota and Wisconsin, because then we'd have two PMWs and would be acronym problems. Well, you've heard the voice. We have our guest, a very special guest today, someone I've known for a while and someone that we've worked with and Adam's worked with out in the field as well, David Nakla, who serves as administrator for the OPC's Committee on Diaconal Ministries, as well as the Short-Term Missions and Disaster Response Coordinator. Welcome, David. It's so good to see you today.
Oh, it's so great to be with you, brothers. Yep.
We're able to connect through Zoom, and thankful that this works. I'll be in Philadelphia in a couple weeks, and I hope to be in the office. Maybe you'll be there, and we can connect again. But for the time being, happy to have you connected here. We're going to have a fun conversation speaking about diaconal ministries and using the OPC, at least as an example, and just talking about some of the initiatives and the programs and other things that the Orthodox Presbyterian Church has done. We have talked about the ministry and the work of the deacon in the past with Cornelis Van Damme. He has a wonderful book called The Deacon. He has a wonderful book called The Elder. Both of them are tremendous. I love his theology of office and his explanations therein. We're going to talk a little bit more of implementation. Certainly, if we get into it, we can speak a bit about the theology of office and the role of the diaconate in the church in this present age. But sometimes people have questions about, well, what does that look like? What does a solid Reformed ecclesiology look like in different contexts and in different scenarios, the local church, the regional church, as well as the denomination and through ecumenical fellowship, ministering to those in the world who have encountered really difficult circumstances through disaster, for example. So we'll talk about all that today. Just a few things to mention. Again, check us out online at reformedforum.org. In our last episode, we discussed a new course that has been launched on Reformed Academy, Union with Christ, The Benefits of His Suffering and Glory, which is taught by Lane Tipton. And we have in the works right now the conclusion to our course on the Shorter Catechism by Jim Cassidy. So that's coming up. But if you haven't already, you can sign up for a free account at Reformed Academy, which is just a little section of the website at reformedforum.org, and you can take courses for free there. Watch them all. They're all available for free, and you can stream them and take the courses on demand at your own pace and do the quizzes and follow along. It's a really helpful tool, so we encourage you to visit us there. There's a lot going on all over the Reformed internets now, David. We've got potentially a new website going. Why don't you tell us a bit about the Committee for Diaconal Ministry in general? Perhaps we can get into some of the new initiatives. It's really exciting.
Sure. Thank you. The Committee on Diaconal Ministries of the OPC has a long history. Goes back almost to the beginning of the OPC. But really in the last 10, 15 years, the committee has grown in its ability to be proactive and responsive to the church. We are a denominational committee, and so we ultimately and predominantly serve the local deacons in their capacity locally. And we always stress the importance of diaconal ministries as inherently personal and face-to-face. And so even though our committee is called the Diaconal Ministries Committee, it really is supporting the deacons locally is our a big focus of ours. And so we do that through conferences. We host a National Diaconal Summit. We had our first one back in 2010, yeah. And now we're planning for our fourth one, which will be in June mm-hmm. of next year. It was supposed to be this last June, and COVID pushed it out, and so we're looking forward to that next summer. And
yeah,
churches to send their deacons.
Yeah,
and then we've also been interacting with our presbyteries. We are a our form of government has a structure built in that's very conducive to even the ministry of mercy and the ability we have to extend beyond just the local deacons, but serve the regional church, the presbytery, those churches in a regional area, and then even denominationally. And this is what we call the network of deacons. And that's really manifested itself very much in ministries such as OPC Disaster Response and other avenues where we can serve together, other needs that arise. We're also working on training material for deacons. That's a big, important thing, aspect of our work.
You know, it's really exciting to hear about all the different programs and initiatives to try to encourage and instruct the diaconate throughout the denomination. Now, most every church will have deacons, according to our Book of Church Order. It's not absolutely critical. The work of the diaconate is always critical to the church. But in terms of Presbyterian polity, at least within the Orthodox Presbyterian Church, it's conceivable that a church plant, for example, might have a minister and an elder, but not yet a deacon. Mm-hmm. It's inconceivable, according to our government, that we could have a church without elders, because you have to have a plurality of elders to have a local church, a particular church, rather than just a mission work that's growing. But in the case that we don't have explicit deacons called specifically to that office, the elders function in that capacity in addition to their ministry and their function of rule. And shepherding within the church. So that's a little inside baseball, but if you'd like to learn more about the reasons, the biblical reasons for that, certainly we can point you to some other episodes and resources to read about. Nevertheless, the work of the diaconate is so important and critical to the assistance and the help of the church. We see maybe proto-deacons in Acts chapter 6, where men were called to serve and to help with the distribution of the meal and other aspects in order to free up the apostles in that case for the ministry of the word and for prayer. And so when we're looking at all of this, we need to be reminded of the way that a body functions. We're all members of a body, and God has gifted ministers, elders, and deacons to function in particular ways in ordained office to do special things. And it doesn't mean that one is necessarily more important than the other, or the people that are gifted for those services are, you know, more special or something of that regard, but we each have a role in the body. And the diaconate is so critical, but sometimes it goes forgotten. And I see that often people that function so well and are so gifted in diaconal ministries, they often aren't noticed by others because they are very discreet and they do their job so well. So I just want to take a little bit of a moment just to pause and just thank the deacons out there, but also to elevate, you know, awareness about the diaconate and the importance of their work and the importance of training and cultivating deacons and cultivating their gifts to do these things. So I know that's a big concern for your committee, but it hasn't at least gone unnoticed from the people in the Presbytery of the Midwest. So thank you for your work, David, but maybe Adam might want to comment on that and the role and the function of the diaconate.
So David, I had a question more, really focused a little bit more on you and your background and what was it in your own history that garnered your interest and drew your attention and your focus to this particular aspect of ministry and serving?
Yeah, thanks for asking that. That's fun to talk about. I grew up in an OP church, and my dad was a deacon. And I still remember as a kid, here's just an example of diaconal service that was very poignant, that stands out in my mind. We were headed, I grew up in Southern California, we were headed up a mountain road early in the morning on a little trip. And we came by, there was a car by the side of the road. And me and my siblings, we were all piled in the back of the pickup truck. And so we were, you know, back in the day, you could do that with in the shell, you know, we had a shell in the back, and there was no communication between the cab and the shell. But I just remember my dad pulling over because there was this car by the side of the road, and seeing him get out of the car, go, and it's very cold outside, and going to, and knocking on the window. And there were two girls in this car who had basically, this is before cell phones and everything else we take for granted. And they had run out of gas or something like that. And they were stuck there and they were freezing cold. And next thing we know, he was popping the door open and bringing them in. And we were going to go get them gas or whatever it was. And just his compassion and mercy towards the stranger and just serving them, and that how that really impacted me as a boy, and just seeing very similar to the Good Samaritan, right, ministering to somebody literally on the side of the road needing help. And so, and that, and diaconal spirit was definitely a part of my father, and he, by his example, he taught that to his kids. And so I've always had a love for the diaconate. I was ordained as a deacon and served as the deacon for 5 years before being plucked to serve as an elder. But I do love the work of the diaconate, and so I think that the Lord equipped me to not only be able to serve denominationally, in some ways equipped me even with my love for the church and understanding of the workings of the church, and serving as an elder in the church, active as an elder. Serving regionally, involved in the church regionally, and in those ways was training me up for something that I had no idea that I would do. My wife and I, we always had an interest in missions, and frankly, I thought I was headed towards missionary deacon work overseas. Had several opportunities to do that short term. With our foreign mission fields in Eritrea and Uganda over the years. And it really was, that's the direction we thought we would head. My background is engineering, and I did that for 15 years. And our goal was to, you know, establish our family and stuff like that, and then shift into some sort of missions or ministry capacity. Mm-hmm. Never really envisioning working for the church, but as the Lord opened doors, I went to my first General Assembly in 2007, ended up elected to the Committee on Diaconal Ministries, and then through that, they became aware of my interest in serving the church in some sort of capacity. And David Haney was kind of the spark plug to craft the idea of a short-term missions coordinator. And but it was also the history there a little bit more with in 2005 when Katrina hit. And it was really the Committee on Diaconal Ministries was not in a place to lead the disaster response efforts because it didn't have staff. And so Home Missions, if you'll recall, led that effort. But Home Missions definitely wanted to give that back to the Committee on Diaconal Ministries. And key to that was for the committee to have some staff to be able to serve as one to respond to disasters. And so these things all kind of coming together led to the development of this position, of this role, and the timing of it with, you know, my life circumstances being open to something like that has led to that. And now I've been doing this for the past 11 years.
Mm. What was your experience in short-term missions? I think people would be interested to think about the application of Reformed ecclesiology to the foreign mission fields. It's not hard, I think, for people to consider the fact that we send ministers overseas or, you know, to other countries in order to do the work of evangelism, preaching, teaching, those sorts of things. But often in contexts, you know, just like in Acts chapter 6 and in local churches, there, you know, a field requires other types of care for the whole person in order to enable or at least make possible the work of, you know, the ministry of the word, for example. So they're not competitive. And certainly the OPC and Reformed churches of this ilk in this confessional ecclesiology are not interested in pure humanitarian efforts. That's not the ultimate goal of the mission, what we're doing. That's what NGOs and other organizations do. But the OPC is concerned of the Great Commission. But to sometimes to get to that work, frequently you do things, diaconal work that enables people. It frees up the missionaries, the specific missionaries, the ministers who are serving as missionaries to do the work of the ministry in that regard, but also cares for the people so that they're in a position and in an ability to pay attention and to receive the ministry of the word. I'd be curious to hear about your experience there and how how that functioned in short-term capacity, but also with a view towards, you know, the larger perspective of the work of the field.
Yeah, so I would just start by saying that my short-term missions experience was very formative for me personally. I grew up in Southern California in the OPC in Southern California. We had it was a regional missionary, Dave Crum, serving in Mexico. He was not called by the Foreign Missions Committee of the OPC, but he was called by the presbytery to work just over the border in Tijuana, Mexico, with the Presbyterian Church there. And because of that close proximity to our presbytery, to Los Angeles area where I grew up, we were down in Mexico serving alongside Dave Crum, short term on a continual basis. Probably multiple times a year, we'd go down in varying capacities. And so it gave us, the Presbytery of Southern California developed a culture of short term missions really very much through that opportunity. And many of our churches would go down. He established something called Weekend Witness. And you'd go down on a Friday, you'd do some sort of project on a Saturday, you'd worship with the saints down there on a Sunday, cross-cultural, cross-language, and then return home. And so so I was one of many who had a lot of exposure to short-term missions in the OPC through that. And that was formative and very helpful for me growing up. And then when I graduated from college, I had the opportunity to go to Eritrea, and that was when the Foreign Missions Committee was just trying to reopen the hospital in Ginda. This is in 1995. And had the opportunity to be there when that was, and apply some of my, construction hands-on skills to open that place up.
Now, I've always thought engineering is like such the greatest skill to have in the foreign missions field, especially for a deacon. Like, if you have small motors experience and you can build things with your hands, a little bit of MacGyver within you, I think that just goes a long way in the field. I think it's good for everyone, oh, yeah. But especially the deacon.
Yes, it really does. It does. That trip planted the seed actually for us. My wife and I, we were engaged at the time to make our plans for the future and our commitment towards longer term service after a time. And so for me, it was very impactful. But I think that short term missions, whether it's diaconal in nature or it's coming alongside of our missionaries and in more the word side of the mission work that they're doing, it connects our missionaries and our fields and our churches in a way that just receiving newsletters or just receiving and reading reports doesn't do. And so when you go to a mission field and you spend time there and you eat meals with the missionaries and you you get to smell and taste and feel the humidity or the dryness, the heat, you get to experience the interactions with the indigenous people. They're not just a name or a picture maybe, but you have a sense of a small sense, but a sense of who they are. I like to say, when you go to a place, you, even though a first exposure is very much kind of a honeymoon experience and very preliminary, our minds extrapolate on pictures and stuff like that. And so when you go, it's not what you think it would be. And you just grow, in so many ways, infinite ways, really, of your exposure to the field, to the people, to the culture, to the country. And particularly as Americans, we tend to be pretty isolated from a lot of the world. They say that if you're bilingual, you speak two languages. If you're monolingual, you're American. right? I mean, you've heard the old joke. So, and it's true, we don't really have a lot of those exposures. Right. And so short-term missions gives us a sense and appreciation for the rest of the world in ways that we as American Christians, unique to American Christian Church, were limited in that way. But to just get to, as you said, the Reformed ecclesiology, our ministry is a ministry of word and deed.
Yes.
And our Savior cared about not just soul, but body and soul. And he does, even as he cares about our body and soul now. The social gospel and the errors of the social gospel was to replace the ministry of, or the care of the body as the gospel, and the care of people as the gospel. But we see it as the ministry of mercy gives a tangible expression, a tangible taste of the gospel. As our Savior, in ultimate ways, saves our soul. From a spiritual standpoint, oftentimes we appreciate that even as He loves and cares for us in our physical realm as well.
And we'll be resurrected. There's an absolute significance to the human as a body-soul unity and the future of that body, which is united to Christ. Even after we die, our bodies remain united to the Christ, though they remain in the grave until Christ returns. And then the dead and the alive in Christ will all be raised imperishable. That's absolutely true. David, what you're saying is so pertinent to me even right now. Just a couple of weeks ago, I came off the field in a short-term capacity with Doug Clawson. I was down in Columbia and spent 12 days there and had experience with them. I had taught through Zoom a year before. I have had correspondence through WhatsApp. I've heard Doug give reports and tell me about what's going down there so many times. I'm thankful for all of those things. But until I went there, then it seems as if your mind expands, and more importantly, your heart expands. And
yes,
I was so blessed by the Lord just to see his hand at work and to realize how small of a sliver, a slice of life we have a window into. But just for a moment, for the Lord to show me just in very simple ways, just attending a worship service in Bogota, for example, and just to see God's people singing in a language I don't know, but I know what they're saying. You know, I know enough Spanish to figure it out, but I mean, I'm speaking more, you know, spiritually in a sense. Yeah. And no, these are my brothers and sisters in Christ, although there are many earthly things that are so different from us, but it was a great blessing, and there's a great advantage to that, if for no other reason than the Lord reveals himself more to us, and we have a bigger picture of the body of Christ and its function. I know you've had that experience too, Adam. You've been in the field, and you've even served alongside David. Did you have a similar experience down in Haiti, for example?
Yeah, Haiti was the place where I've been to some short-term missions activities outside of the OPC, but in the OP, really, it was Haiti, and blessed to go down there with Doug once, and then again with Jeremy Boothby. And of course, you brothers are both so right. Getting boots on the ground, your own boots on the ground, is so essential, and I think that's probably a way that we get people excited and want to come alongside and help in various ways, is to get them involved. And David, my mind is regarding short-term missions is thinking about the current unique situation that we've been in for the last year and a half or so, particularly regarding, you know, COVID. Could you speak to maybe some of the challenges and or opportunities, and where do you see us going and heading in terms of challenges and opportunities in that regard?
Yeah, it definitely has been a tough season for short-term missions. And I can say that I think our missionaries are feeling the impact of that. We should be all the more fervent in prayer for our missionaries as they serve. That isolation that we all experienced and kind of still are experiencing off and on is all the more exacerbated when you are in a faraway place that is not your home, it's not your culture. And so I think it's been very difficult for our missionaries. And that's one of the, you know, we've kind of reflected on the benefit of short-term missions for the one who goes, but the one who receives, while it is a lot of work for our fields to receive short-term visitors, it is a great blessing to them and an encouragement to them. And I'm thankful to report that. I mean, all of our OP foreign mission fields welcome short-term helpers. And because they not only know that the value of short-term folks coming through is important and valuable to the church, but it is actually really a great blessing and benefit and encouragement to them when they receive visitors. They receive that taste of home. In my own experience, I know singing with them, singing from the hymnal, singing sometimes, you know, just maybe around, you know, in the evening, you know, four-part harmony is something that, you know, they, you know, a lot of our fields, our missionaries miss. Mm-hmm. And, and, And so, there's ways that we can really bless and encourage our missionaries by going and visiting them and just being with them. Even just what I like to talk about, the ministry of presence. It's so valuable and so important.
Wow.
I think we've all become much more cognizant of the value of ministry of presence in COVID, right?
Oh, yes.
Can't underestimate it.
Oh, absolutely. David, could you tell us a bit about some other ways that the Committee on Diaconal Ministry is assisting the work of the church here? What are some things that you might encourage, or ways in which CDM is seeking to cultivate the gifts of the deacons in our local churches within the country, and what are some ways that churches might continue to grow and flourish in that regard?
I would say three things. One of the things we desire to encourage our churches and deacons to consider is the difference between ministering to people and ministering to property. And some churches, I would say, err in leaning too much on the diaconate to care for the property of the church, and in a sense, almost serving as, in some of our churches, we'd call them trustees. And while I think that biblically we could argue that the work of the deacons is to be sure that the elements of worship are in their place, the circumstances of worship are conducive towards worship. When you put all the responsibility of taking care of the church buildings on your deacons, that can be a lot of responsibility that can, in a sense, distract them actually for the maybe more important responsibility of ministry to people. And I think that I would argue that one of the reasons that we ordain deacons is not so that they're the set up the chairs guys, because you don't need to be ordained to set up chairs, but because they're ministering to people, they're getting into people's lives and advising, counseling, encouraging God's people, his sheep. And I would argue that that's one of the reasons why we have such a high calling for and high qualifications for those who would be suited to the office of deacon. So that would be the first thing I would say, is that just encouraging our churches to, insofar as if they're burdening their deacons with too much of the care of the property, that they might seek ways to alleviate some of that by giving others who may not be called to office, and using other gifts in the church for those things that you don't need to be ordained to, so that the ordained deacons can focus on the ministry to God's people. The second area that I would say that we've been working to try to encourage as a ministry in the church, and even led by deacons, is with respect to the area of disaster response. It's been interesting this year to watch the fires burning on the West Coast and the hurricanes one after another blowing through the East Coast, and coupled with tornadoes, one of which hit in our Philadelphia area about 5 miles north of my house 2 weeks ago. Never thought I'd be that close to a tornado. And it impacted one of our Oki families. So the opportunity to be prepared to minister in very tangible ways, hands-on, as the family goes through something as big of as having their house flooded or even burned down. These are hugely life-changing events. And so these are really opportunities for us to come alongside one another. So that'd be the second area. And then probably the third area is an area that is very much again in the news today, is the area of ministry to the refugee. And I would say that not just refugee, but the stranger, the immigrant, those who the refugees are very vulnerable people. And even as you look at scripturally, when we think about the ministry of the deacons, we often think of two classes of people. We think about the orphan and the widow. But actually, if you were to do a search for all the passages that talk about the orphan and widow, there's often a third category, and it's actually the orphan, widow, and the stranger.
Yes.
Or the sojourner.
Alien within your gates.
Exactly. The alien right. within your gates. Absolutely. And so each of these is a vulnerable class and of people. And so it's something for us to be challenged with, to think about as the Lord even opens the doors of refugees coming to us, strangers coming to us, those who are facing a crisis in another part of the world are coming to us. These are really occasions for us to show the mercy and love and compassion of Christ to the stranger. And it's kind of big in the news lately, and it's an area that we don't have all the answers of what that looks like, but we're seeking to learn so that we can grow in that.
David, I got maybe this is a more of a sensitive issue, but I'm sure you've thought about it many, many times, and I think people would be really anxious to hear your thoughts about it. We think of the refugee, the sojourner within our gates, people coming from other countries, but we also think about the role of disaster response. And I think for a lot of American citizens, the solution is always the state, or the federal government's going to fix this, or my politician has got to make the right decisions, and I pay my taxes, and they fix the problems, or they're supposed to. How should the church view these aspects, and more specifically, how does the CDM and the short-term disaster response interact with agencies like FEMA or Border Patrol or whatever? What are some parameters or ways to think about that relationship and the work of the ministry, understanding that we're not the state, but also that we have a role and a function that is not the purview of the state, and vice versa? How should we think about that relationship?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say that the key thing is that there is a relationship there. And so FEMA has its place, and insurance policy with regards to disaster response, insurance policies have their place. Mm-hmm. And what we have actually been doing is disaster response has been very most helpful and effective in the situations where insurance or FEMA doesn't cover the situation. And so when Adam, you were in Houston area and experiencing Harvey, that's where we had a great opportunity to interact a good bit. And, you know, when you have floodwaters coming from outside your home, most likely you are not covered. Unless you have a flood insurance policy, a separate flood insurance policy, if water is coming from outside your home into your home, you are not covered. And yet, that could be one of the most expensive and devastating things that happen to your home. The filthy water that comes out, it's different from a water leak in your home, which would be covered. Filthy water coming from outside is just that. It's filthy. It's got sewage in it. It's got pesticides in it, petroleum products. If that is not properly dealt with and eradicated from your home in a careful and exhaustive way, there's a good chance you'll have problems, health problems that result from that down the pike. So that's where the church has the opportunity to come together and meet this incredible need. Particularly for and first of all is for our brothers and sisters in Christ who are going through such an event. With regards to so that's just to say that we're always growing in our understanding of disaster response. It's a continual learning process. And I would say that more and more, I'm growing to appreciate the differing circumstances of disasters. And I don't know that the church necessarily has the capacity or need to be involved with every disaster that occurs in the life of its members, because a lot of those can be helpfully met, those needs, through the government resources for which all of us pay taxes and contribute towards, as well as insurances. But there are these instances and growing instances. The floods and the occurrence of floods happening just seems to be really growing. And and there's a reason why our insurance policies don't cover them, because it's such a it's such a devastating event and so costly. With regards to, if I could shift to kind of the other area that you mentioned, with regards to the ministry to the refugees and border patrol, and how do we relate to the government and stuff like that. I would say that, first of all, it's good for us always to be reminded that that we are first Christians before before Americans,
citizens of heaven,
right? Our home, we are actually strangers here. This is not our home. And we are, our home is, you know, is in heaven. And so, and we, that's the promised land. So we are all sojourners. At the same time, we do have, countries and borders, and those are important things, for government or the organization of government, the authorities of government, which we know all government and all authority comes from the Lord, and the government servants are actually His ministers, ministers for good, and they don't always serve faithfully in those ways, but they do play important roles, and we need to. Serve within those boundaries, insofar as they don't ask us to violate God's commands. Right. But there are many who are permitted to come here. Refugees, somebody who is technically a refugee, is somebody who, it has been confirmed, has a well-founded fear of even of great harm, even death, in their home country. Many of those are Christians, and that is the history of the world, is the persecution of Christians. And again, in America, we are so distant from so much of that, although we're seeing more of that, more and more. But that plight of Christians abides throughout the world, and many refugees coming to us,
yes,
are Christians, and so being able to engage in ministry to them is definitely Galatians 6:10, especially the household of faith, do good, especially the household of faith. That would be the case there. But I would say that even showing mercy and compassion to others who are going through an incredible time in their lives, could be the way that the Lord uses to bring them to Himself. And we don't know who God's chosen ones are. Mm-hmm. And so as we have opportunity, we should show love and mercy and compassion to the stranger, even as our Savior loved us and died for us, even when we were His enemies. And so we can be thankful for the work our government organizations do. Refugees as a technical class is an important one. There are those who come across the border who are what they call asylum seekers. Those are people who are seeking refugee status but don't yet have it. Many of those come here and they have permission to be here. Sadly, they don't have permission to work. So it's actually they're actually oftentimes more diaconal need than our refugees, because they have to be here for a period of time. They're waiting for their court date, but they don't really have the means to care for themselves. And there's not government organizations in place to care for them. And so the Cashins and Redeemer down in Clarkston,
yes,
they actually took in an asylum-seeking family who is now part of their church. But that's a big call and a lot of work, but a worthy one.
But that, you know, as far as I understand, that there are an enormous amount of refugees there in Clarkston. It's a big thing. I mean, this is kind of a mysterious part of my history, if I'm not disclosing too much. But before, you know, my parents were married, he had a house and lived by himself for a few years while he was working. But he took in, through the church, they had some sort of a program, but he had two Vietnamese refugees live with him, just two men that couldn't even speak English at the time. And over the years, we'd sometimes get Christmas cards from some of these Vietnamese. So to me, it's just, who are these Vietnamese guys? Like, I didn't have the concept that people would need to flee their country for various reasons because they had nowhere to go. And then even once they end up in the United States, where can they be? And so I don't know the details of this particular program, but at least through that church, my dad was able to have two guys live in his house for a few months, however long it was, until they could kind of get jobs or get more or less on their feet. And the hope would be you can minister to them and plug them into a church so that they can provide more than just food and shelter, but, you know, the words of life. Yeah, I mean that hearing the reports about what's going on in Clarkston and that's always encouraging to me. But that's another area where we can expand our vision of the way that God is working in the world beyond our commute to work each day and the few people we see in our neighborhood, that sort of thing. God is truly doing miraculous things in the lives of His people, wherever they may be and wherever they're coming from.
Yeah, and can I just say that in what all of us were able to witness in Afghanistan, you know, these people who are so desperate that they're clinging to the side of an airplane as it's taken off, right?
Yeah.
That kind of desperateness and fear of what is here, you know, that they're trying to get away from is probably the most recent sense of what the Vietnamese faced back in the 70s, right. And that's, you know, the plight of the refugee when your government actually is out to kill you, that's a fearful thing. And when you come and you're basically asking for another country to receive you as and to protect you, but you're asking, that is a in there probably isn't a more vulnerable place in the world than to be a stateless person.
Yeah, we were seeing that just a few weeks ago in Colombia. So many thousands of people are coming from Venezuela into Colombia for many of the same reasons. And it is a vulnerable class, and we do need to provide for them. David, what are some of the other things going on? I hear that you're working on a podcast for the Committee on the Diaconal Ministry, and as well as a National Diaconal Summit coming up next year in June. Could you describe some of those things? I think many of our people would be really interested to hear about them.
Yeah, thanks. I did not think we would be doing a podcast anytime soon.
And now we're on a podcast talking about a podcast. So
exactly. Meta. Exactly.
Yeah, very meta.
Yeah, well, and this is so second nature to you, Camden, but it's a whole new realm for us. But we're really excited about it. We're starting to have our first recordings, and it really is a great venue and a medium to interact and talk about things that are valuable and important to our deacons. And so actually it was about, I don't know, maybe a year ago or I don't know, sometime in the last year that the Committee on Christian Education approached us. They've been for years desiring to find a way to minister to elders, and they had considered maybe should we do an elders summit, kind of like the Committee on Diaconal Ministries does a deacon summit. But they've finally landed on, they said, no, let's do an elders podcast. And so that's a venture that they're doing, but they said, we'd like to see if the Committee on Diaconal Ministries would be interested in doing a companion deacons podcast. And so that's what we're working on. The launch is supposed to be in November. The name of the podcast is the Reformed Deacon podcast, and that should be debuting sometime in
exciting
in November. So you can
we'll link to
check
that
your
for sure.
Podcast players for that.
Are you talking? I imagine there might be a whole host of topics, and even the format might conceivably change week to week, month to month, whatever the frequency may be. But are you going to work through any case studies, whether hypothetical or actual, historical things, to kind of talk through issues that various churches might have encountered?
Those are great ideas, Camden. I'll have to write those down after this.
Fair enough. I know for elders,
I can see it. I am talking to a pro. So we'll be talking more about, if only I could find the OPC historian, he might be able to point me to some. Is that you, Camden?
It is now. Sometimes I forget. I remember that happened. Yeah. Well, I remember in seminary we had this class called the Ministry Integration Seminar. And it basically was every week we'd come at lunchtime and sit down with our PT professor, Tim Whitmer. And I loved this class. I wasn't expecting to like it. It looked like one of those things, I have to do this to get my degree. But I ended up I'm spilling the beans here, but, opening my heart, my fleshly heart. But it came to be just a really wonderful course. But each time we would go in, somebody would bring some really difficult thing that happened in their church that they had gone through or experienced. And we talked it out. It wasn't a therapy session, but we talked about the principles involved and how a future minister, as a minister down the road, might address such a situation. It could have been sessional relations. It could have been an issue with people at the church. Could have been a disciplinary case, you name it. So all these things are very sensitive. But I imagine with great wisdom, either in diaconal cases or sessional matters, a multitude of counselors, there's always great wisdom in many counselors, might be able to work through some of these situations, either taking pieces, anonymizing information or combining things into case studies, perhaps just to talk them through. I find great benefit sometimes just going to presbytery tonight. Sometimes you just need to talk it out. Guys, have you ever encountered, this is going on? What, and then someone's like, had a case like that. Or maybe it wasn't like that, but people have different perspectives and are able to help one another. It's a way to encourage one another and work through some things. Because some of the things that deacons deal with are very, very difficult. And the deacon may have never, ever in his life encountered such a situation. But I'm betting somebody else has.
Well, one of the difficulties with diaconal ministries is, as you said, it's oftentimes sensitive, and you're ministering to sensitive aspects of people's lives, and so trying to figure out how to navigate, how do we share, how do we learn from one another without improperly disclosing information or violating confidences, that type of thing. This is where the plurality, plurality is important. And the Lord uses multiple minds and angles looking at things to give us wisdom on these things. So
tell us about the summit coming up. That's June 9th through 11th, 2022, coming up. Is this paired with General Assembly? I should know my dates off the top of my head, but I know June 11th is a significant day, I think, in OP history. Usually the historian needs to know that one.
Yeah, you do. We are in the process of changing the dates to the, I think it's the 2nd to 4th, the week before that, because we actually will be, General Assembly, because of COVID, it did not determine the 20, 22 dates until just this last summer, and usually they're 2 years ahead.
Yeah.
And so the dates they chose at Eastern University are sit right on top of the Deacon Summit, which will be in Wheaton. So we are moving the week ahead to June 2nd through 4th. The Deacon Summit is, we encourage OPC deacons, deacons in training, pastors who'd like to come with their deacons would be welcome. Deacons from other churches, if you can register and sign up, you're welcome. This year differing from the previous three summits, we've had the first one we had Brian Fickert when helping Hertz, and then we had his co-author Scott Corbett at the second summit, and then the third summit we had Dr. David Apple from 10th Presbyterian mm-hmm. Church in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And his book, drawn a blank.
We'll put the link in the episode description. He spoke at one of my
not just a
seminary pitch. Courses.
And but this year we're going to have a whole slate of OP ministers and some elders and maybe even some deacons speaking on a whole series of topics. And so Craig Troxell, Ron Pierce, Lindell Smith, Nathan Trice, Stephen Tracy, and Elder Matt Butler on security measures. We're looking forward to a little bit of a different format, a similar format, but a different set of speakers. And all the more reason why we can't be at the same time as General Assembly.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, it's been...
It's a Thursday. By the way, it's a Thursday night. We start on... men travel on Thursday. We start on Thursday night, and then we go till noon on Saturday, and men fly, and leaving guys enough time to fly home.
Yeah, get back to
church. Saturday afternoon.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds exciting. We'll definitely put links to that in the episode description, and keep people apprised of these events coming up. But where might people find you online, and maybe is there a new website on the horizon, or should people just head on over to opc.org and from there can link to all the various places?
Yeah, no, we actually have our own website at this point. It's mm-hmm. called opccdm.org.
Yeah.
And there's resources, yeah, all the information about the committee. We are one other thing that we're close to launching is we have some training material that I actually developed it to go down to Columbia, just like did Camden a few years ago.
Yeah,
and basically kind of try to put it into did a series on Ministry of Mercy, put that material into a format that can be used kind of as training material, and really it's just collating the best of the best resources that are out there. Very little if it's original to me, but it's just put into a format that we would encourage men to consider using as training material.
There's great value in that. Absolutely. I appreciate that. Well, very good. We'll put links in the episode description. We encourage everyone to take a look at these resources, and we're so thankful for your work. Thank you so much, David, and thank you to the whole committee that's involved. And I want to encourage you in those labors, and also encourage other people to reach out. And we can connect. You know, you can go to the website yourself, but if you need a name or a number or something to someone to talk to, listeners and viewers, you certainly can reach out to us as well at mail@reformedforum.org, and we'll try to put you in touch. But David, until next time, thanks so much. It's been really great to talk to you.
Thank you, brother. Good to see you both to you.
Amen. Hope to see you soon. And people can visit us online as well at reformedforum.org. And you'll find information about all of our programs and courses, upcoming events, and ways to get in touch with us. But I do want to thank everybody for listening and watching. And we hope you join us again next time on Christ the Center.